Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
On day 7 of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the country's emergency services have said that more than 2,000 civilians have been killed and hundreds of buildings, including hospitals and kindergartens and homes, have been destroyed. The number of refugees fleeing the conflict has surged to nearly 836,000 people now, according to the United Nations. That marks a massive jump from the figure of 677,000 people announced just yesterday afternoon. While some people flee the war, ordinary people in Ukraine are taking up arms to defend their country. And earlier today, the mayor of Kyiv and former world heavyweight boxing champion Vitali Klitschko told the BBC how patriotic the people of Ukraine are.
How patriotic people are right now in Ukraine. Right now, I go to the blog post and see the people with different profession. One of them, doctors, another one, actor. They take in one day the weapons in hand. Right now, they proud to fight for his houses, for his city, to defend the families. We doesn't have another choice.
That's Mayor of Kyiv, Vitali Klitschko. Meanwhile, Ukrainian men living in Ireland have travelled home to fight and have joined local defence forces in Lutsk and Kyiv. Here, the Taoiseach spoke to the Prime Minister of Ukraine just last night and said the repercussions of this war will be felt along the length and breadth of this continent. During leaders' questions in the Dáil, the leader of Sinn Féin, Mary Lou MacDonald, asked the Taoiseach about the government's ongoing preparations with the humanitarian challenge from Ukraine and questioned him about the expulsion of the Russian ambassador.
It's clear that the actions of Russia in Ukraine are abhorrent. And to that end, I want to ask you about the expulsion of the Russian ambassador to Ireland. This is something that thus far, an action that you have not taken. You have advanced the case of working in concert with our European partners. I happen to believe, Taoiseach, that now is the time for our government, for you as head of government, to take the lead on this issue. So I want to ask you, please, have you raised this matter with your fellow EU leaders? Have you put a proposal to them? And can you agree that it is now time to pursue this course of action?
In the face of war, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin insisted diplomatic channels must be maintained to protect Irish citizens in Ukraine.
In terms of diplomatic channels and expulsions, that's the easy bit. It is our view that across Europe we work in concert with our European Union colleagues. I've been absolutely passionate about this, that our unity is our strength. It's easy to sort of say, look, I'm going to lead ahead of others. I actually think the most effective route, if I could, it's very important that I make this point genuinely, in the face of a war that we're facing, that's on our continent, that the European Union working together as a unified body with the United States and Canada packs a powerful punch. We have seen that in terms of the sanctions that have been agreed. And we were very clear at the EU Council meeting, we wanted the widest set of sanctions. We want to protect Irish citizens. We want to maintain diplomatic channels to protect Irish citizens, both in Ukraine and in Russia and elsewhere. And it's important that we bear that in mind before taking precipitative action on the front of expulsions, which can be done in a day. It's very easy, but the repercussions could be much longer felt by Irish citizens. That's the challenge.
Now, notwithstanding the Taoiseach's justification for the government's stance there, the leader of the Labour Party, Alan Kelly, was highly critical of the Russian ambassador's continuing presence in Ireland.
There's indiscriminate killing of civilians, where children are being murdered, where we know we have a dictator now who's pursuing a scorched earth policy. And we've always shown leadership in this country. And the Russian ambassador is a liar. He lied to the Irish people on multiple occasions. So we're in unprecedented territory with a regime that is acting in an absolute horrendous way. And there is no way on this earth, and it's not just domestically, that the Russian ambassador should stay in Ireland.
And that's the leader of the Labour Party, Alan Kelly, there calling for the expulsion of the Russian ambassador, Yuri Filatov. Well, in a moment, I'll talk to RT Primetime's Fran McNulty, who's on the border of Ukraine and Hungary. But before that, let's go to Dnipro in the eastern part of Ukraine, where I can talk to freelance journalist and photographer Jack Losh. Jack, you're very welcome to the programme, and thank you very much indeed for joining us. Can you give me a sense of where you are now and what's happening there?
Yeah, of course. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm in Dnipro, which is a major city in the kind of central eastern areas of this besieged country. It has been spared the levels of extreme violence that Russia is meting out in other cities as we speak, unfortunately. The atmosphere is very tense. Civilian militias are forming. They're checking everyone's papers. We've been approached several times today to have our papers checked to make sure we're not Russian saboteurs, I suppose. There are guns on the streets. Key buildings, government buildings, city hall are surrounded by tank traps and sandbags. Even amazingly, outside one of the handsome museums in the city, there are ancient medieval statues dating back some 1,000 years. Even those have been surrounded by sandbags to stop any shrapnel blasts or shockwaves from ruining these invaluable cultural monuments. Mm-hmm. Earlier this afternoon, I was at the train station. Huge numbers continue to flee, all adding to the more than 800,000 Ukrainians who have been forced to flee in the face of Russian aggression. Families were wrapped against the cold. Young children are crying. There wasn't panic in the air. They were, as always, defiantly calm, but it was an incredibly tense atmosphere. We're seeing a pincer movement move up from the south and down from the north of Russian troops and artillery. And it really does seem like it's only a matter of time that this city will be faced by the bombardments that we're seeing unfold in places like Kharkiv and other besieged cities right now.
And you have been in Kharkiv, haven't you? It's about a four-hour journey, is that right, south of Dnipro is, south of Kharkiv. They have been spared the onslaught that Kharkiv has witnessed so far in Dnipro, but can you tell me what you saw in Kharkiv?
Yes, I was there from the beginning of the war. In fact, just two days before the war erupted last week, I arrived. It's a wonderful town, open boulevards, cobbled streets. Even spent the day before the war having a few days off, expecting the worst, and went to a lovely art gallery there. Everything has changed. This city has moved through the looking glass. Just today, we've seen terrible rocket strikes hit the main police station there. That was on flames. Big chunks of it had been knocked off. That hit home to me because it was just almost a week ago that I was walking beneath that building to go to this art gallery to see some beautiful paintings by Ukrainian masters. While I was there, we decided to get out because it was getting too hot. But while we were there, we came under repeated bombardments of indiscriminate Russian rocket fire, shells, very close explosions, deeply unsettling. Today we've seen news of Russian paratroopers landing in Kharkiv. They're fighting for control of the city. Russian shelling and aerial bombardments are continuing ahead of a possible renewed ground attack. So many people are dying and getting wounded by this. The last count, I think it was something like 21 people in the city have been killed, 112 wounded. Those numbers have almost certainly gone up since they were reported earlier today. And those are just some of the more than 2,000 Ukrainian civilians to have been killed since the Russian invasion, according to the latest estimates by the country's emergency services. That is a horrific number and a dramatic increase from
Before I let you go, Jack, I have to ask you and bring you back to the train station in Dnipro, because I watched some of the recorded scenes there. They're absolutely heartbreaking because you have women and children leaving men behind for the most part. And the goodbyes are heartbreaking because these people may never see each other again.
For all the huge numbers of more than 800,000 people displaced, 2,000 people killed, a country of 44 million, you know, these numbers are hard to get our heads around. But every single story here is a personal, heartbreaking story of loss, farewell, impossible choices in the face of overwhelming adversity. Do they stay to look after their properties, their families? Do they go to find safety? What kind of uncertainty will meet them on the road once they cross borders? Impossible dilemmas every single day. We saw desperate people, men in tears, after putting their wives and children on these evacuation trains to stay, presumably to fight, perhaps to protect their homes. To see this unfolding in Europe in 2022, it feels more like the Second World War. It's a week on, less than a week on, it's still impossible to get your head around.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Jack Losh, freelance journalist and photographer in Dnipro, thank you very much indeed. And Sarah, we're going to another pressure point in the conflict now.
Yeah, we're going now to the capital of Ukraine, Kyiv, where BBC presenter and chief international correspondent Lisa Doucette is based. And you're very welcome to the programme. Can you tell us what is the current situation where you're at now?
Well, darkness has fallen on the seventh day of the Russian invasion. There'll be a curfew in force shortly. About an hour ago, we heard more explosions, mainly on the outskirts of the city. And we've had a warning from the mayor, Vitali Klitschko, who's a former champion boxer, urging citizens to remain inside, warning them that, in his words, the enemy is coming ever closer to the city. The capital of Kyiv remains eerily quiet. The streets have been drained of life. People have gone to the basements, to the bunkers, to the bomb shelters because the air raid sirens sound constantly throughout the day. And on the edge of the city, about 20 miles away, is that long serpentine armored column of Russian tanks and troops and heavy artillery that many of your listeners will have seen in the satellite images that have gone around the world. So this is a capital which is both full of dread, but also full of defiance. So many are signing up to help defend their families, defend their future, and defend their country.
And Lise, can you tell us, in terms of that long 60-kilometre convoy that we've all been watching over the last 2 days, really, at this stage, do we know anything at this point about its progress, reports that it had stopped?
Yes, about 24 hours ago, we were told by a US defence official that it had largely stalled. It's not clear why. There are reports that it could be having problems with getting enough fuel, problems with getting enough food. There's also reports that some of the Russian soldiers don't want to come forward. We've had reports like that from across the country, young soldiers crossing the border into neighboring Ukraine, confronting not what they expected, not a military exercise, not Ukrainians welcoming them with flowers, but a war which has involved really brutal shelling on some of the main cities, on residential blocks, on hospitals, on schools, even on orphanages. So is that one of the reasons why the convoy seems to be stalled? Or could it be, as some have suggested, that Russia is watching to see what happens as it focuses on the cities to the east, to the south, where they have been making where they have been advancing, moving into the cities, occupying areas, and are they just waiting to see how that unfolds, try to wear down the resistance in other parts of the country, and then, of course, Kyiv is the prize to wait for that until the end, whenever that end is.
And, of course, that resistance and that morale has been led from the front, hasn't it, by President Volodymyr Zelensky. Do you think he will remain in Kyiv if Russians take the city?
Well, we know from when this invasion started, the United States called him up and said, would you like us to get you, your wife and family out of the country? He went public with it. He said, I don't need a ride. I need ammunition. He has risen to this new role, I'm sure by now. Most of your listeners know that he's a former comedian. Suddenly we're seeing videos of when he won the Ukrainian version of Dancing with the Stars in 2006. He was the voice of Paddington Bear. But all that is back in the mists of time. His role now is he comes before the camera. He does his own selfie videos in his olive green fatigues. And he has really been mobilizing the nation, inspiring the nation. And I can say that I was here for weeks before the invasion began a week ago, and there'd be snide remarks by opposition politicians, by Ukrainians saying, well, he doesn't really understand the intelligence, well, he's not being well advised. All that is gone. And today, President Zelensky has said that this Russian invasion has united us as never before.
All right, we'll leave it there for the moment. Lise Doucet joining us there from Kyiv in Ukraine.
Now, as key cities in Ukraine are being bombarded by the Russians, the mass exodus of migrants continues to flow west. We're going to Fran McNulty now of RT's Primetime, who's you're on the border with Hungary and Ukraine. Tell me exactly where you are, Fran.
I'm actually in a city, a very large town called Korzo at the moment, Cormac. It's about 50 minutes from the border, and we're staying here, and the hotel we're staying in is almost entirely full of Ukrainian refugees. These are people who have the means and the money to book a hotel to stay in when they figure out what's going to happen. But where we've been all day, up and down the border at several border crossings, there are thousands of people who are not so fortunate. People who are sitting on the side of the road on suitcases, trying to feed young babies, women who are trying to pacify children, entertain them, keep them happy. And we're seeing these scenes over and over again everywhere we go. There are a couple of different types of people that are crossing the border, Cormac. There are the people who have means and money. There are the people who literally have nothing and nowhere to go. And then there are those who have friends and family who can collect them. And you see them being collected on the Hungarian side of the border in Ukrainian cars, the relatives coming to collect them so they can go and stay with them. But in many cases, there are so many more people who literally have nothing. They have no idea where they're going. They're sleeping in train stations. They're sleeping in local schools. They're being fed on the goodwill of charities and government agencies that are providing support to them. And the scenes that kind of in train stations and the border crossings, they are reminiscent of something from the past. It is horrific to see small babies crying, being handed out of trains to volunteers who hold them until their mother can hold them again and try and bring them to safety. And that is what is happening.
They really are in a completely vulnerable position and forced into it. We spoke to our colleague in this programme, Paul Cunningham, who was on the border with Poland yesterday, and he was saying that the reception areas, the reception of refugees was quite organised there. Is it the same where you are, Fran, and what services are available to them?
It is very organised. A lot of humanitarian aid agencies are here, government agencies as well. What happens is people are brought in, they're asked for a passport. If they don't have one, they're not going to be turned back once they get across the border. But that determines how they're processed. And they're brought off, they're given supplies, they're given food, they're given nappies if children are there, even toys for the children, snacks, because many of these people are getting on buses, heading on towards Budapest, or getting on a train, heading on towards Budapest, and they're being put in facilities there, large gymnasiums, schools, as I mentioned, and there they can stay for a period of a week, 2 weeks, until they figure out what they can do. Then there are other people who have just kind of gone their own way. We spoke to one woman here today who's 30 years of age. She is on her own with her cat in a hotel in this city, and she has nowhere to go. She doesn't know what to do, and she doesn't have a hotel room beyond Friday. And that's the reality. She's left behind a very successful life, a good job, and there are thousands of people in that position. And this war has literally taken everything from them. And they're not only dealing with the practicalities of where do I sleep, what do I eat, how do I take care of my children in these conditions. They're then looking back. Will my home be there? Loads of them talk about that. I don't know if I'll ever have anything to go back. I don't know if my husband or my boyfriend will be alive by the time I get back. And one woman today, just her English wasn't good. She put her hand to her neck as if to choke and said, that's what I'd like to do to Russia. And so angry and so upset about what they have. And that same woman said, Ukraine is Ukraine. Russia is Russia. Leave us alone. That's the limited English she had, but she made her message very, very clear.
Fran McNulty from the Hungary-Ukraine border, thank you very much indeed. And Fran will continue his reporting, of course, on radio, online and on RTE's Primetime. We'll take a break.